Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 15, and here are some of the stories we are covering. M23 rebels are alleged to be behind mass graves found in eastern Congo.
There have not been any response from M23 yet. The rebellion don't accept any allegation saying that they killed people in Kishishi.
We'll have an update from Sudan, where heavy fighting continues since the breakdown of the latest ceasefire. The East African Business Council threatens to take Kenya to a regional court over Uganda milk restrictions. Petty traders in Liberia react to exchange rate increases. A Guinea-Conakry court frees three activists and a politician.
After hearing from both sides, the defense and the state, the judge decided to dismiss the matter. He says charges brought against the four men were unfounded and therefore no reason to keep them in prison.
And South Africa's persistently high homicide rate come under the spotlight. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S.-based Human Rights Watch reported this week that Rwanda-backed M23 rebels were apparently responsible for mass graves found in Kinshishi village north of Kivu province in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The rights group said the bodies are believed to be those of villagers and captured militia members executed by M23 fighters between November 2022 and April 2023. Reporter Al Katanti CBT Jaffa is in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He tells me the M23 has not responded to the allegations, but that in the past they have denied responsibility for any massacres.
A Human Rights Watch report accuses M23 and Rwanda to be authors of many massacres in Rutshuru, and the NGO said they have evidence that there are many mass graves in Rutshuru, especially in Kishishi. There was a massacre in Kishishi in November of last year where the government of DRC accused M23 to kill many civilian people. And this was also accompanied by a report from many NGOs, even from MONUSCO. And the number was very big because, according to the DRC government, the number of people who died was around 300. So this report of Human Rights Watch just came to confirm what the DRC government reported since the beginning of this year.
Has there been any response to this allegation from the M23?
There have not been any response from M23 yet. The rebellion don't accept any allegation saying that they killed people in Kishishi, because since the massacre in Kishishi, M23 still denied everything from the government, even from NGOs, as they killed people in Kishishi. But now, as NGOs has made many investigations and get some evidence from witnesses and sons of victims, I don't believe M23 will get any response on this.
It seems that the mission of the UN peacekeeping forces in the DRC, also called MONUSCO, might be coming to an end pretty soon. How do you see the protection of civilians if the peacekeepers leave? And how does the Congolese population feel about this information?
The protection of civilian DRC is still a big problem. As you know, there was a mass killed yesterday in Ituri, and even this massacre in Kishishi. Kishishi is not far from a UN base, but let's say that MONUSCO troops didn't succeed to protect 100% people in DRC. And this decision of MONUSCO and the Congolese government to make end of this mission in DRC is welcomed by Congolese locals, because many people in DRC are accusing MONUSCO to do not succeed their mission, because people are still killing, even if MONUSCO is there.
As reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Fighting has continued in the Sudanese capital Khartoum and Al-Jineina in West Darfur state since the expiration of the 24-hour ceasefire over the weekend. Saleh Mahmoud is a human rights lawyer and president of the Darfur Bar Association. He spoke with viewers Nabil Biajo from the Sudanese town of Wad Medani, where thousands of people fleeing Khartoum have sought refuge.
Fighting started immediately after the end of the ceasefire agreement. And now another point people don't see is that there's influx of people fleeing Khartoum, going to either outside Sudan, to Egypt, maybe to Port Sudan for other destinations, to Ethiopia, and they are experiencing difficulties and untold humanitarian circumstances, but worse humanitarian circumstances. People are not talking also about the reflection of this situation of Khartoum into other parts of Sudan, especially Darfur, is witnessing killings and violations. It is genocide. It's even worse than it was in 2003 and 2004. It is something that is happening in darkness. There is no at all any media allowed to go there to talk about the situation. People are dying. Zalindi, Al-Jineina, Al-Fashir, Kutum, Nayara, to some extent, are under the siege of this warring party.
The conflict in Sudan is almost 2 months old. There's a mediation process that's been going on for weeks in the Saudi city of Jeddah. Well, what do you think of the mediation process so far and what it has produced?
Many people inside Sudan, some political parties, welcomed very much the efforts of the mediators in Jeddah, especially the USA administration and Saudi Arabia Kingdom. Earlier, when it was about the necessity to stop the fighting in Khartoum between the warring parties, that objective was very much welcomed. Unfortunately, ceasefire agreements were not at all respected by the warring parties. And it is unfortunate that the mediators in Jeddah were never showed or talk about the necessity of the presence of monitors on the ground to monitor the commitment of the two parties, warring parties, to what they have signed as an agreement to stop the fighting.
That was Saleh Mahmoud, a human rights lawyer and president of the Darfur Bar Association. He spoke with viewers Nabil Piajo from the Sudanese town of Wad Medani. In Guinea-Conakry, three civil society activists and a politician were released from prison on Tuesday after the court dropped state charges against them. The four men were accused of taking part in an illegal gathering during banned political demonstrations. The three activists from the platform of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution spent over 9 months in prison without trial. Karim Kamara has detailed.
After hearing from both sides, the defense and the state, the judge decided to dismiss the matter. He says charges brought against the four men were unfounded and therefore no reason to keep them in prison. Their release comes almost 3 days after the opening of their trial. Ulima Tuba is the lawyer for the defense. She says they have a true victory and that the truth is hard to ignore. She says those in power must realize that Guinea is ruled by laws and those rules must be respected to the letter. The decision by the judge came as a surprise to many in the court. Abdoulaye Babadi Kamara is the assistant state prosecutor in the case. He says they are going to see if they can appeal the verdict. He says they will do so with the time frame set by the law. The four men were charged for taking part in an illegal gathering during a ban on political demonstrations. They were also charged with the destruction of both private and public properties and injuring security forces. They all pleaded not guilty and described the trial as politically motivated by the junta. Prominent among those arrested was Umaru Sila, or Fonike Menge, of the Platform of National Defense of the Constitution. Looking sick and haggard, he said prison would not impact the struggle to support democratic principles in Guinea. He called on his colleagues to join the party's rank and file and urged the public to remain mobilized to defend democracy. He says he and his colleagues spent 10 months in prison for nothing as hostages to unfounded allegations. He says today the judge made a courageous decision and that they are going to continue their struggle until victory is achieved. He affirmed that he is ill from the long stay in prison and on Wednesday he will seek medical treatment. Right activists have described the release of the men as victory over oppression and deplored their long stay in prison without trial. The release was one of the conditions put forward by the opposition for the holding of talks with the junta. Military officers launched a coup in September 2021, suspending the constitution and detaining the president. The junta vowed to preside over a return to civilian rule, but did not immediately set a date for elections. Relationship between the junta, political parties, and civil society movement became bitter after the opposition accused the junta of planning to hold on to power. They accused the junta of managing the transition alone without input from political parties and members of civil society. Even after the release of the four men, bellicose statements continue between the junta and the opposition. It remains to be seen if their release helps to calm down political tensions in the country. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 15. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. As Liberia prepares for presidential and legislative elections in October this year, the government has come under criticism for not doing enough to fix the economy, including a high exchange rate that has risen from 150 to 170 Liberian dollars to one U.S. dollar. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
The new rising exchange rate has caused an increase in the prices of goods and services on the Liberian market. Tumete Moyu, a petty trader at Waterside, one of the most famous marketplaces in central Monrovia that's usually filled with petty traders. He explains the difficulties he says traders are experiencing daily to buy products for resale.
The rate is really embarrassing us, mainly as petty trader sitting in the street, sitting on the sidewalk, bad. The people in the store don't take Liberian data from us, they take US data, and whenever the rate increase, our profit decline, because you buy something today, 18,000, and let's say it's 19,000, each time 1,000 add, your profit has to decline, and you have to struggle to get it, your principal. So the rate is really disturbing us, and we don't know how far we're going with the rate.
Joseph Bena shares a similar view, but he blames some business people for the high rate. He appeals to the government to do something about the problem.
For now, some people changing 870, 880. So now if you carry the water in the store, they're taking it for all 900 in the store. And when we buy market, and we sell, we can't get anything. We're just living by the grace of God. So we really want for the government to really see about the rate. Because there are some people, they just carry the rate up because they want U.S. So we are suffering.
Cornelius Sandel sells shirts. He says it has been difficult for him to make a profit.
The way we sell body clothes, it can't be there because the people carry the press us. The money we sell get in the goods, we can't get it from there. And infecting us because the way we sell the goods, the people are not able to buy it from that amount. I want to see change on the way to go down because infecting all the business people in Wolosaya.
Economist Bunaike George Good attributes the high exchange rate to the demand for more U.S. dollars by business people who are importing goods ahead of the Independence Day celebration July 26. But he says one answer would be for Liberia to go back to a previous law that allows reserves of the central bank to be used in cases like these.
There's a demand for importation. People were shopping, it was taking place. People are buying, so nearing the season in May, June, people are mobilizing U.S. dollars, pay vendors overseas to import goods and services. So the best to do is to use a reserve, meaning indirect intervention. And to do that, in previous years, the Central Bank Act calls for it to use what reserve to control exchange rate. So as a result of that, there was some time where it was one-to-one.
Liberians are hopeful that the exchange rate will drop soon and prices will return to normal. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
South Africa's persistently high number of homicides has come under the spotlight. In the first 3 months of this year, more than 6,000 people were slain in the country, according to official statistics, and fed-up citizens are calling for effective policing. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town.
In the Tafelzug neighborhood in Cape Town's Mitchell's Plain urban area, Feruz Kelly is fighting to protect her grandchildren from warring gangsters. She's already lost one. In 2019, 10-year-old Aisha Kelly was killed by a stray bullet during a gunfight between alleged gangsters. Feruz Kelly explains that Aisha was walking to a nearby shop with her mom.
Aisha went around the corner and we heard the shot just go, bah! And then it's like, yo, what happened now? And somebody came around the corner jumping so high from the ground to call, Aisha's laying here, Aisha.
Kelly says a few days after her granddaughter was buried, South African Minister of Police Bheki Cele visited and they discussed the three suspects who'd been apprehended. But she says she's still waiting for justice.
He made a lot of promises to me and my daughter. He said the case is going to be finished in less than a year, and it's almost 3 years down the drain.
Member of Parliament Oka Ter Blanche serves on the Portfolio Committee on Police. Terblanche compared South Africa's homicide figure to the number of civilians killed in Ukraine, which the UN estimates to be about 9,000 since Russia invaded in February 2022. Terblanche says the latest homicide statistics compiled by the police show 6,000 people were slain in the first 3 months of this year. And he says in the 12 months from April 2021 to March 2022, the number of homicides in South Africa was roughly 25,000.
Only 14% of all murders that got reported to the police, you know, the police succeed to investigate properly. The detective rate is only 14%.
Only 14% of reported murders were solved by police last year. In reply to questions from VOA, Police Ministry spokesperson Lorenzo Temba wrote that the ministry is spearheading a detective academy to bolster investigation capabilities, and it's also looking beyond South Africa's shores for assistance in this matter. When announcing the latest crime statistics in May, Cele said that police visibility would improve and more technology would be employed.
The SAPS is also purchasing unmanned aerial vehicles or so-called drones to better police from the sky. More drone pilots are also being licensed, and drone pilots interns are being recruited. Body-worn cameras as well as shot spotters in high-density crime areas are being prioritized.
Meanwhile, at the University of Cape Town, third-year social work student Zukile Ntentema is setting up a youth violence prevention center. He aims to provide data analysis to help anti-crime organizations measure success.
Of course, we want to help some of these grassroots organizations with proposal writing and other aspect of academic aspect. But most importantly, we will also be boots on the ground.
There is a shortage of social workers in South Africa, home to over 60 million people, and many of its social ills are rooted in poverty. Ntentema says everyone must work together to combat the high homicide statistics so that the country's future generations not only survive, but also prosper. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
The East African Business Council has threatened to take Kenya to the East African Court of Justice. The move comes after Kenya restricted milk from Uganda, which the community says violates the East African Community Common Market Protocol. Moses Aviarimana reports.
The East African Business Council has condemned Kenya's move to restrict the importation of milk from Uganda, despite Kenya being a signatory of the East African Common Market Protocol, which allows free movement of goods and services. Kenya is said to have blocked 24 million liters of milk from Uganda. Kenyan producers of milk Beef and poultry have been lobbying for the government to block imports which affect their profits. John Bosco Kalisa is the chief executive officer of the East African Business Council.
We are now taking a deep dive study to look at the implication on the exporter's side, but also on the importer's side. And this issue of a quota is not allowed for the regionally produced goods. Why do you need a permit to import? Usually these goods should circulate freely. We are going to take this matter to the East African Court of Justice. We can use the bilateral engagement, but if it fails, then we raise the matter to the East African Court of Justice. They have the capacity, they have the competence to resolve such issues.
The Common Market Protocol is one of the pillars of the East African Community integration, which all member states signed in 2010. It allows the free movement of goods and services in the region. Uganda says Kenya's restrictions have led to 24 million liters of milk that have not been delivered, according to the Ugandan Dairy Development Authority. Kenya did not totally ban the importation, but rather limited the issuance of importation permits. Kenyan officials in Arusha declined to comment on the issue. George Odong is a lawmaker at the East African Legislative Assembly from Uganda.
We have weaponized trade. There exists trade cartels in the region. We have, as Uganda, a right under the treaty to reciprocate. So my call is for President Ruto to look the camera in the eye and stop these cartels that is spoiling trade between our different partner states. If we allow breaches in these rules going unpunished, we are setting not just a bad precedent, we are actually setting a culture where we undermine the very spirit and letter of our cooperation.
This is not the first time the partner states of the East African Community violate the Common Market Protocol on the importation of goods from member states. Penina Mbabazi is the program coordinator for trade, investment and development at the Southern and Eastern African Trade Information and Negotiations Institute.
There is need to call for review because such situations where regions or different countries actually disagree on how fast our different goods can actually trade with each other and remove non-tariff barriers that are blocking trade as a region, but also review of the Non-Tariff Barriers Remedies Act, because that act literally is also governing so many principles to how trade can be done within the region from the different partner states to actually harmonize standards across the region.
The Dairy Development Authority indicated that Uganda produces about 3.2 billion liters of milk per year, with about one-third of that used for domestic consumption. Intra-East African Community trade grew by just over 11% to nearly $11 billion in 2022, from $9.8 billion US in 2021. For VOA Africa, I'm Moses Havyarimana in Arusha, Tanzania.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.